Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, and welcome to the 217th edition of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com, locally as well on FansFavorite.com. Come on in. Chat room is open. Discuss whatever you like amongst yourselves. If you do have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. And before we talk about a certain topic today, I would like to say thank you very much to WorldSoccerTalk.com. Feuersteins Fire has been nominated for Best Radio Show of 2014. Of course, there's a lot of heavy hitters on that list. And you can head over to WorldSoccerTalk.com. I'm assuming it's probably either going to be on page 4, 5, or 6 by now. A lot of stuff being written there at WorldSoccerTalk.com for the awards. But if you do follow me on Twitter, at D. Feuerstein, or if you are my Facebook follower, it's obviously going to be on my Facebook timeline, please head over there or to some of the many Red Bull groups, fan groups that I post there for my stories and articles. Please go ahead and vote for me. There's some pretty hard hitters on that list as well. I won't lie, but you know what? Being nominated, and let me just say, this was a complete shock that I got nominated for this show, Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. First of all, I want to thank the selection committee of WorldSoccerTalk.com for nominating this show. A lot of hard work goes into this show, trying to give you guys the best content possible, discussing the American game here in the United States, as well as Canada, our neighbors in North America, of course, as well as all the discussions about CONCACAF as well. So once again, please vote. And once again, thank you to the selection committee at World Soccer Talk for the 2014 MLS Awards. There's different categories, different types of blogs, different types of podcasts and shows. But once again, being nominated makes you feel pretty special. Now, who knows? Maybe I'll sneak in at the end and win the award. It would be nice. But once again, there's a lot of heavy hitters in this group. And just being nominated by anybody for this show has been surprises for me. Again, very, very excited to know that I was nominated. And once again, this is where hard work does pay off. Very happy this happened. Very excited that this happened. Please vote if you're able to. But if not, obviously, like I said before, there's a lot of heavy hitters on that list. And I really, really believe that this situation is a wonderful thing to be nominated for and be nominated completely. I'm very, very excited, very, very happy. And once again, thank you very much to everyone over at WorldSoccerTalk.com for nominating the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. Thank you once again from the bottom of my heart. But as we discuss what's coming here, and we all know what's coming, as the last two shows based on post-game against Colombia and at Republic of Ireland, discussion actually is not about Jurgen Klinsmann. This discussion is aimed at FIFA because FIFA is finally starting to feel the pressure from their stupid re-editorialized of the 400 plus page report by former U.S. Attorney Michael Garcia, and then making it into a 42 summary saying there's no corruption by Joachim Eckert, the judge in the adjudicatory chamber of the FIFA Ethics Committee. And now we're seeing a lot of anger, a lot of eruption. Now we're seeing a lot of something that we haven't seen in the past. And that is, of course, saying goodbye to some of the sponsors that help FIFA being run financially the way they do. Sony is one. And now Emirates Airlines is another. Now, some will say that their contract is up anyway and they're not going to re-sign with FIFA. But even if that's the case, shouldn't we just ask these new people or these new sponsors that might be coming into FIFA, shouldn't we tell them basically that they should just not even bother? Sony is no longer going to be with FIFA. And at the same time, as we said already, Emirates Airways will not be with FIFA either. But still, there is plenty of anger going around talking about FIFA. The FIFA partners are Adidas, Coca-Cola, Hyundai, along with Kia, their secondary company, Emirates Airlines, Sony, and Visa. These are the six companies that make FIFA's World Cup and FIFA go round. These are the important people. Now, Adidas did resign with FIFA as their official supplier of match balls for the World Cup. Coca-Cola is up in arms. Emirates will be leaving. Sony will be leaving. Visa is still around. Hyundai is also still around. We don't know what's going to happen, but apparently there's some rumblings going on. And with these types of rumblings going on, this is going to start hitting FIFA in the pocketbook, in the wallet, in the, dare I say it, the Swiss bank account. And very interesting. Great job by Mr. Rob Harris from the Associated Press, meeting with the Secretary General in Jerome Volk. And the title of the article is FIFA Faces Years to Rebuild Reputation. Isn't it funny that the General Secretary of FIFA, the drawmaster, every time there is a World Cup qualifying draw before a cycle begins, and then the final draw of the World Cup itself before the tournament begins, it is just unbelievable that we are finally getting some honesty from within the House of Football. We are finally getting an honest assessment of what this whole thing has been going on by not allowing the public to see the report, by not giving the press the full report, and allowing Mr. Joachim Eckert to all of a sudden rule on a 430-plus page report of the World Cup bidding process for both 2018 Russia and 2022 World Cups. And you know what? It's about time that we have the truth come out. It's about time that we're going to see some honesty from these people that are supposed to be the ones with the highest of ethics that run the world's favorite sport, the world's game. Here's a quote from the article from Rob Harris. It said, it's a bit FIFA versus FIFA, Volk said. It's sad for FIFA, definitely, and it's sad for our reputation and for the image. It's sad for commercial partners. It's sad for all the people who are supporting football. Continuing on, I hope deeply the decision would be this. Excuse me, let me reread that. I hope deeply the decision would be that this bidding process on 18 and 22 is closed, Volk said. Hopefully, Russia and Qatar will retain their hosting rights. You know what? And here's something else Volk said. I'm trying to find. Here it is. That's what I was looking for. The image of FIFA is something I agree. Over the last 2 weeks, I would not say reached the bottom, but has reached a level which is definitely a level which we will not go lower than. I know that football is still a very strong product, and I'm not really concerned with FIFA's finances for the future. Obviously, FIFA will probably get something, but we will have to wait and see what the situation is going to be when this whole report does get to find out what's really in it. But once again, I'm very strong on this, where I say I think it's too late to take away this current cycle from Russia as the host for the World Cup. I think it's too late to take this World Cup away, even though there's a lot of unethical things going on with Vladimir Putin trying to reclaim the Ukraine, or I guess part of the Ukraine, to rejoin it with the Soviet Union or back to where it belonged with Russia. But we can do something with 2022. We can do something about Qatar. And once again, I will continue to say this. I am not against an Arab country hosting a World Cup. I'm not. What I'm against is the shenanigans it took to win this World Cup in 2022. Bribing every member of the executive committee of FIFA to host a World Cup where the temperatures are absolutely abominable, to try and sit in a stadium for a little over 2 hours. You have to remember, it's not so much when the match starts, when you get to half or the full time. There's always the warm-ups. There's, of course, before the match begins, everyone's going to try to get themselves prepared for this and everything, and even after the match is over with. Once again, if the Qataris created stadiums with a retractable roof, then I wouldn't have a problem with it. Stadiums that I've seen so far are wide open, no roof, except for maybe the main stadium, which is only one. And I really believe that we are going to have ourselves a terrible moment if a player or a coach or a supporter or a member of the stadium concessions crew finds a way or falls down due to extreme heat and they're not revived in time. There are a lot of issues right now on 2022. 2018, it's already over. We already have a logo for Russia, which I like. Stadiums are ready to go. The date has already been set for the qualification draw for each and every confederation, except for South America. Can't worry about Russia now. We are already into the cycle. But we have 4 years now to get ready for that World Cup and have some fun. 8 years down the road is where we should concentrate heavily on, and hopefully the United States or someone else that was within the voting group for 2022 will get that opportunity. Russia is already underway. 2022 should be the one that gets revoted on. And I'm very strong about that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, good show for you tonight. As we get ready to talk about the first leg of the conference finals, LA Galaxy hosting the Seattle Sounders, 1-0 victory in the first leg. Red Bull Arena for the second leg, New England Revolution, they take two away goals and lead 2-1 on aggregate against the Red Bulls. We'll have Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer today on a taped interview. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about LA San Jose. Excuse me, LA Seattle. My fault. Sorry about that. You know, this is a game where you were wondering if a goal was going to get scored. You were wondering if there was going to be a goal in this game because you have probably the top two sides in the league facing each other between the Seattle Sounders and the Los Angeles Galaxy. The Seattle Sounders already with a double, a U.S. Open Cup championship, and the Supporters' Shield. And you're seeing what you saw this past Sunday, two fantastic matches that got underway, and they looked absolutely incredible. They looked absolutely incredible as both of these teams in the Western Conference going at it tooth and nail. I mean, let's look at the I'm going to look at the statistics for a minute here and say, my God, shots on target were even with 3-20-10 on shots alone in favor of the Galaxy. 12 out of the 20 were off target for LA. Meanwhile, 2 were off target for Seattle. Seattle offsides twice. Fouls 14-11 in favor of Seattle. Both sides had two players booked. No one ejected for or suspended for the second leg on yellow card accumulation. 539 total passes, 84% for the Galaxy, 360 total passes, 79% for Seattle. Possession in favor of the Galaxy for 60.4%, 39.6% for Seattle. 51 out of 48, 51 duels won for the Galaxy, 48 for Seattle. You know what this means? It means that this game was very, very close to being even. Some of the categories or some of the statistics are even, close to even, or in favor of. But when you see clearances, 35 by Seattle, 19 by the Galaxy, it shows that the Sounders were under siege. Not a lot, but they were under siege. And then in the 52nd minute, Marcelo Sarvis, on a nice shot that was bending, you would probably say maybe towards the far post, but you didn't know if the ball was going to go inside the post, hit the post, or outside of the far post. But a deflection off of the Sounders defender, and it goes right down the middle, and it's 1-0 Los Angeles, and the Galaxy, after the first 90 minutes, will head up north to Seattle, Washington, and try to do and finish the job. The Sounders, I got to tell you, it was tough for them, tough sledding, but boy, oh boy, this was a great match. And joining me right now, of course, the ever-famous LA Galaxy insider, the one and only Adam Serrano, who saw this match from top to bottom. Adam, that was probably nail-biting action, or as they like to say, the English, squeaky bum time, even though the Galaxy did get their goal.
Yeah, you know, it was a very interesting game. It was a very exciting match between those two teams. Now, the Galaxy had their opportunities from the start, but they really just weren't able to capitalize. And they have a great heads-up play by Marcelo Sarvas, who found himself in space with plenty of time to shoot. He got a little bit of a fortuitous bounce off the hip of Chad Marshall, and it went past Stephen Fry, who had a fantastic game, to give the Galaxy a 1-0 advantage. And they have to feel confident, you know, a measured confidence heading into that second leg in Seattle, a place where they have won at times this season.
Absolutely. I got to say, though, Both defenses were really strong in this one. A lucky bounce for the Galaxy off of the hip of Chad Marshall, as you said, for the goal, the only goal of the match. We're seeing right now probably the best two sides in the league right now going at it with each other, and this was very entertaining, very, very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because, yes, these are the two best teams in MLS. Yes, they have the best talent. You know, no one can match them from that. But when you have, there's the saying, you know, you can have too much of a good thing, and I think that that's the truth with this series because, you know, it really hasn't been that end-to-end great attacking style, beautiful soccer that you'd want to see. When you have the two best teams in the league, you know, it's been very physical, very chippy. You know, these two teams just don't like each other. They hate one another, and they don't want to see the other one go to MLS Cup. So it's resulted in some very ugly games. And, you know, I expect another one on Sunday in CenturyLink Field in Seattle because, you know, these teams know what's on the line. They know that there's a seed in MLS Cup waiting for them if they put themselves through. So I expect another, you know, very chippy, very dirty game. I expect more yellow cards, you know, by the bushel. But, you know, it's a little bit of a shame that you see that from teams that are so offensive-minded and so talented. But, you know, it's just the cards that were dealt.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? This is sometimes what you're going to have to expect. I mean, you're going to get yourself a filthy, dirty game out there from either side or one of the two because you know how good it's going to be. And I think right now this speaks volumes for how MLS wants to portray the league to the soccer community as well as those outside the U.S. or North America. Right now we're seeing some great goalkeeping by Fry and Pinedo, respectively, for both sides. Alan Gordon's been a big component coming off the bench whenever Bruce Arena needs him. And I think we're seeing two of the best coaches matching wit for wit between Bruce Arena and Ziggy Schmid. I think, you know, it's more than what the league is looking for. And just like the other Eastern Conference final with the Red Bulls and the Revolution, the league is getting what they never had in such a long time. They're getting star power. They're getting great cities that host MLS sides. I mean, you got Boston, New York, L.A., Seattle. I mean, this is everything the league wanted, and now they're finally getting.
Yeah, you know, it really worked out very beautifully. You know, great stadiums, great stars. You know, it's a real shame that Bradley Wright Phillips won't be in the second leg in Gillette Stadium on Sunday. It's based on his yellow card. But other than that, you know, you're talking about full-strength teams playing for the chance to go to MLS Cup, and I think that all of them feel that talent-wise, that they're capable of not only winning MLS Cup, but really, you know, putting on a show and showing that, you know, they are the best team in the league.
Yep, they really, really are. I want to ask you this question because obviously the discussion about referees will never, ever go away. I think you saw in the first leg between the Red Bulls and the Revolution, Alan Chapman dealt 10 yellow cards. In this match, even though there were four cards given, two to each side, there were moments where you saw Robbie Keane looking for the card and he didn't get it on his opponent, or even Donovan, even Omar Gonzalez was screaming for cards and nothing happened because apparently they announced it through the media that Kevin Stott said he's not going to book anyone that's on a yellow card issue because if they get booked for the first leg, they won't be able to play in the second leg in Seattle. And, you know, do you think Stott did the right thing or do you think that maybe there should have been a little bit more of an issue of cards in the first leg than what was already dealt?
I mean, first off, you know, I feel like in all fairness, we can't say that that actually happened for certain. You know, it was alleged by Omar Gonzalez after the game that Stott had a conversation with one of the players and said, you know, I'm not getting on the yellows. I don't want anyone suspended for that second leg. So, you know, we have to have full disclosure right there. But, you know, I did think that there were some heavy challenges, and I think that both teams thought that, you know, they could have gotten some yellow cards. I saw, you named Galaxy players, but I saw, you know, Clint Dempsey go for the yellow. You know, he's very, very dramatic when it comes to looking for those calls as well. I now finally I get what the deuce face was for, because I get how he kind of twitches his eyes towards referees, and you know, I can see why that might annoy some people. But I think that, you know, you're always going to get a physical game. It's the playoffs. That's just what happens in these types of matches. So, you know, you have to deal with it. The referee is not going to call that many plays. He's not going to call so many fouls to hinder teams. And they want to see the best players on the field in big, tight situations, and they want to have competitive and fun games. So when you have that, you know, you maybe you dish out some more yellow cards, or maybe you don't dish out any yellow cards. So it's all the referee's prerogative. You know, Jairo Marufo is the referee for the second leg. He refereed the Galaxy's second leg game against Real Salt Lake. So, you know, he tends to call plays. You know, I remember David Beckham was never a big fan of his. Even once describing him as the star, he prefers to think that he's the star of the game, which, you know, that's Beckham being Beckham. But, you know, I think it's going to be a chippy game, very physical, as I said, and you're going to see a lot of hard challenges. You're going to see some fisticuffs, some handbags, as the English say, because this game is played between two teams who want to be in that MLS Cup final, and they want to host it, and they want to have a chance to win a championship.
And let me just say, I do agree with you about it's alleged from Omar about what Stott did say to him. We don't know what really happened. Obviously, you know as well as I do, that's a hot, contested match. Both sides want advantage. Both sides are trying to get the referee to dish out a couple extra cards here and there just so they can find a way to control the tone of the match, and you're absolutely correct. We don't want to assume that's what Kevin Stott said. We don't want to go there. But once again, you are correct there, Adam, is that this is going to be fireworks personified over up in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle, Washington, Galaxy, and the Sounders. Obviously, the away goals rule is now in favor of the Galaxy. How many goals do you think they're going to get, and do you think the Galaxy can find that final moment to push through and to go back home to host the final?
You know, it's going to be very difficult. You know, the Galaxy's road form has not been the best as of late. You know, they haven't won away from Carson, which includes Galaxy home games and Chivas USA road games, you know, RIP Chivas. They haven't won those games. They haven't won a game away from Carson since September, when they defeated the Colorado Rapids in that really dramatic comeback game. So, you know, it's going to be difficult, but, you know, the margins are in their favor. But I don't look at the away goals so much as I look at the way that this team has played on the road at the carpet on CenturyLink Field. You know, they've been aggressive. Yes, they lost that game 2-0 back in October, but you're talking about a game where they dominated the run of play. They had countless chances. You know, Jossie's artist, Landon Donovan. You know, Robbie Keane was off. He was not available in that game, so that's something to be considered there, and they're going to have him in this game. You know, I believe they'll probably have guys like Marcelo Sarvas, guys like A.J. Legarza back from injury, so they'll have a full team there. But I think that, you know, it's going to be a difficult game, but LA has shown that they can score goals on the carpet in CenturyLink. I think if they get that first goal, pressure on the Sounders, so they have to score three goals, you know, I don't think that that's going to suit Seattle, because they're going to have to open themselves up. And, you know, as we know, since 2009, this Galaxy team has really made their living off the counterattack. And if they can do that, they know they can beat teams and they can exploit them. So that's not a situation that Seattle wants to be in. I do think that the Galaxy are going to get past Seattle. I think that they get a 2-2 draw in this one and go home, take the Western Conference trophy back to Carson, and win it and go play an MLS Cup and host it next week.
There we go. All right, Adam, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Have a good evening over there in L.A., and I hope to talk to you next week. Take care now.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. No problem at all. Adam Serrano, the L.A. Galaxy Insider, of course, on Time Warner Cable Sports Network, doing halftime show during Galaxy games at home and are on the road. Fantastic job he does for covering the L.A. Galaxy and everything else that goes along with it. And, of course, he can't join me now. Got the taped interview, of course. Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today talking about that first leg. We will go New England first, and then I'll give you the Red Bull side of things and, of course, post-match stuff after the match. So here is Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today on the New England side of that first leg between the Red Bulls and the Revolution.
And this is Daniel Feuerstein once again on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, special Eastern Conference Leg 1 review. Join me once again, as always, from New England Soccer Today. It's Sean Donahue. Sean, how are you? And it's good seeing you on Sunday at Red Bull Arena.
Yeah, glad to be back on the show with a fantastic atmosphere, Red Bull Arena, on Sunday. That was a really enjoyable game to be at.
It was even more enjoyable because, obviously, a little over 1,200 New England Revolution supporters came in, filled in, I would have to say, more than one section, four sections filled in the northern end of the upper bowl. That was wonderful to see, not just the stadium being filled 25,000 plus for a sellout on NBC nationwide, but great showing by the Fort as well, with the Rebellion coming down there and filling up those sections.
Yeah, it was phenomenal to see how many people made it down there and that how long they stayed there after the game was over, continuing to cheer. Great to see the players acknowledge that, too. And it was just phenomenal. Nothing I've ever seen before from away rev supports. Obviously, there's some fans that travel to a lot of away games, but nothing this big have I ever seen at an away game before at all.
Absolutely. I mean, I was in complete shock, too, but I was also in awe and surprise, and it was fun to see that. And finally, hopefully, maybe this will carry over into the 2015 regular season, not just for the Revolution to be big here in the Boston sports market, but at the same time, MLS as a whole. Maybe we're finally seeing away support becoming bigger and better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Fort now is sold out for the home game, too, so that's good to see as well. That sold out pretty quickly. It should be a great crowd up here at Gillette next weekend as well.
I know. I can't wait for that myself. Now let's get on to the match. I think I saw you with Brian O'Connell as well in the press room. I think what we saw, and I did say this would be a big midfield battle, and yep. I really, really felt it came through. It came through fruition because so much play in the midfield, so much passing, so many hard tackles, so much action in the midfield that this first leg really was a showstopper, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, we talked about the absence of Roy Miller, and I think you can't understate that. I think I mentioned last time that Bunbury could benefit from that, and you know, sure enough, he went out of Yongo right away early, got that fantastic goal, and then again set up the game winner with a nice assist. Obviously, he wouldn't play a role in that as well, but you know, I think that was an area they were able to exploit, and we talked about how the Revs don't go down the wings all that much. In this game, they did it a little bit more because I think the Red Bulls did a pretty good job of limiting Lee Wynn, as you mentioned, that you know midfield battle. I thought that was something they did a good job at, particularly when Alexander was in. When they took him out, I think Lee Wynn found a little bit more space there. But overall, I thought that was an area the Red Bulls did a good job to neutralize. And then on the outside is where the Revolution found some success.
Absolutely. I thought, well, I will say for Oyongo, I mean, he was a little bit naive at times, but most of the times I thought he was solid out there. I mean, you can't really blame Oyongo for the first one because Bunbury, even Roy Miller would be falling susceptible to that great move by Teal Bunbury because Teal really showed what basically he's been known for and he's been injured for so many years. Finally, he's able to shine, and, you know, it's a shot that probably at least on an attempt should have been made, but Luis Robles just couldn't get to it.
Yeah, you know, it's the move he used to get open is something that we see from him a lot, and that you know, sometimes he finds success, but sometimes they're able to stop him on. The left-footed shot that we saw from him is not something that we've seen much at all He's a guy that's, you know, very right-footed, and I didn't think he was capable of a shot of that quality with his left foot. I'm not sure he did either until it actually went in, but you know, what a goal that was from him, and a great way to open this game. But, you know, Red Bull certainly had their chances after that, tying the game up, and then Wright Phillips, you know, if he had scored that wide-open header that he had just before halftime, I think it would have been a completely different game.
Oh, absolutely agree. I think Bradley, if he leapt a little bit higher and maybe put his head down on the ball a little bit more, that's definitely 2-1 Red Bulls before the half. Once again, Jermaine Jones, you see why the Revolution wanted him so badly. I mean, it doesn't matter where in the box he is, he will continuously try to find a way to get a goal, whether it's sliding into the ball, trying to power it home, trying to find any way possible to get that ball in. You can tell he's a gamer, and wow, that's an X factor right there, more than I thought he would be for the Revolution.
I'm completely with you on that. I thought that, you know, Jermaine Jones would be a great pickup for this team. I had no idea how good of a pickup he'd be on field for his impact towards this team. I think you saw it in that game. It suffered 7 fouls, which is as much as the rest of the team combined. You know, lots of one-on-one battles with Thierry Henry, where he came out the winner with some great saving tackles. And, of course, gets forward at the end, you know, when I'm sure the team would have been pretty happy with a 1-1 draw. Still made that run late in the game to get that game winner. So you really can't underestimate the value that he's brought to this team and what he's done to, you know, what was already a decent team that, you know, had their struggles midseason. He's really transformed them into what looks like a contender now.
Absolutely. I also want to go to the keeper position for a minute, because I think while maybe not all the questions have been answered on Bobby Shuttleworth, because obviously Matt Rhys is such a top keeper when he's with the Revolution throughout his entire career. We have to say, though, I think Shuttleworth has finally risen to the occasion. I don't know. I mean, you've seen him more than I have, obviously. You know, I would like to think that maybe Shuttleworth is still a work in progress. But to me, in this match, forget the whole Columbus series, because I didn't think he had much to do in that series anyway. But in this match, against a top-quality side like the Red Bulls, I think he is now finally graduated to that upper echelon of keepers. Even though there's still plenty of years ahead of him, I think he's finally starting to reach that potential.
You know, I think you're right. I think you look at the beginning of the season, and he's a different keeper from what he was then. I think we all had questions over, you know, his abilities at the start of the season, struggling with long shots, giving up some tantalizing rebounds, things like that on shots where he, you know, should have saved. He gave up some rebounds against the Red Bulls, obviously, but on very difficult shots where that's to be expected. But I think even looking back at the Columbus series, I thought he did a phenomenal job. He made some big saves in that series where it could have been a lot closer if not for him. And then this game obviously came up big several times. The one question mark that still really remains with him is his distribution. And I think, you know, that was on display, the problems of that a little bit against the Red Bulls. You saw multiple goal kicks that went directly out of bounds. I don't think that's not something that he'll be proud of, and something that he could certainly work on and improve on, and has been an issue with him this year. But other than that, I think he's really improved his game in all other areas and looked really good against the Red Bulls and against Columbus.
Now, here's the question that I have for you, and obviously you're on my side of the press box on the south end, but of course you probably took a look at it on replay many, many times, either at Red Bull Arena or back when you got back up into the New England area. Did you feel Jermaine Jones was offside when Bunbury played that ball? Because obviously, in a situation where the goalkeeper is already off his line and there's already one man back, and it looked like he was ahead of Cahill or the last defender, but he was behind the ball, did you feel that's an offside play, or was he on?
Yeah, to me, I've seen several different angles from him. Problem is, none of them are straight on. From some angles, it looks like he's behind the ball. Other angles, it looks like he's in front of the ball. Now, if he's behind the ball, then he's onside. So that's the question mark there. Very difficult call. I've also seen people say that Bradley Wright Phillips was offside on his goal. I think both of those were, you know, pretty much very, very, very close, about as close as you could be. So it's hard to say. I think in both cases, the right call was no call because it was so close, but camera angles on both of those weren't great. I think the linesman wasn't in the best position on either of those as well. So it's hard to say, but I think it kind of evened out the way it went.
Yeah, it probably did. Now, I think you were frustrated, not with both teams, because both teams played fantastic. Obviously, yep. The Revolution got the result that they were looking for, 2 away goals, even though you did concede 1 to the Red Bulls. And it's going to be a big game coming up on Saturday back at the Fort. And don't worry there, Sean, Thierry Henry will play.
I've heard, yeah.
Yes.
I was wondering when he would ever say whether or not he would play. I almost wondered if it was going to be a surprise factor. They didn't say it at the last minute.
Oh, no, he declared it.
Flip the game planning. But, yeah, I did see that. And, you know, I got to give Tyrion some credit. We left the game pretty late, I believe, around 6 o'clock, maybe a little bit after 6 o'clock, walking back to our cars. And there were some Red Bull fans that had stayed out and waited for players to leave. And sure enough, Tyrion Reeves was leaving and stopped to sign autographs and take pictures with the fans pretty late after the game. So that was great to see. Got a lot of respect for me for seeing him do that. Certainly did not expect him to stop when the fans were there surrounding him on the way out.
Absolutely. But let me ask you this big question. Of course, we always have to point the finger at officiating. Alan Chapman was the official for this match, and I think you can agree, Brian can agree, I can definitely agree, as well as Mike Petke and Jay Heaps. Alan Chapman was absolutely horrendous in this game. I mean, 10 cards is unbelievable. He absolutely lost control, and he just was completely lost.
Yeah, it was crazy. 10 yellow cards for that game were nuts. I actually thought that some of them were certainly deserved.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Jones might have actually been lucky on the he had two pretty bad tackles in a row. One of them he got away with no yellow card. Secondly, got a yellow card that maybe could have been a red card. But certainly 10 yellow cards in that game were a bit much to say the least.
Now let me ask you this, because obviously there's certain referees in U.S. soccer, or I guess it's now under pro, that you worry about. Which referees do you get nervous about when they have to come and officiate a Revolution match?
You know, I think Toledo is one that they've had some question marks on over the years, and he'll be roughing the second leg, so that's an interesting choice.
Oh, no.
But I think any MLS ref has had, you know, his bad game, so I wouldn't necessarily single out too many, but... You know, I would say that Toledo's one that fans have had issues with over the years, and he'll be doing leg number two.
Baldomero Toledo is definitely one of them. Alan Chapman just became number two.
Yeah.
From Canada, from the CSA, Silviu Petrescu has definitely been
horrible
official. Obviously, Mark Geiger has been the top official. I've kept saying this many, many times. Mark Geiger is the best official that U.S. Soccer or Pro has right now, probably since Brian Hall. I would also have to say Jair Marufo has improved. I think Ricardo Salazar that's true, he still has his moments. I think Ricardo Salazar has been decent. Nothing that much to complain about, or depending on if you're from the Pacific Northwest, we won't go there. But definitely Chapman, Toledo, Petrescu, those are the three worst officials I have ever seen in my life right now that I wish they would just go back and relearn the laws of the game.
You know, I question the selection process for the playoff games and who we've seen for them. I don't know who makes those decisions or how it's worked out the way it has, but I don't think the playoff referees have necessarily been the best referees.
Absolutely. All right, so listen, second leg at Gillette Stadium at 3 o'clock or 3:30 Eastern time. I don't remember when, but I know it's around the 3 o'clock hour.
It's listed at 3 o'clock, but since it's on national TV, it probably will start off closer to 3:30.
Probably will, definitely. And it's going to be on NBC Sports Network this time around. All right, so what is going to make you a little nervous about this second leg, or how do you feel it's going to be different? Because obviously Bradley Wright Phillips will be suspended with yellow card accumulation, and then, like we said already, Thierry Henry will be playing on the turf, and it looks like Tim Cahill is going to get back in there as a member of the starting 11.
Imagine Cahill will replace Wright Phillips, which would be a very different player. Wright Phillips, again, I don't think his finishing was all that great in the last game. I don't think his finishing has been all that great in the playoffs. So, you know, had he been in top form, they might have. I think they could have scored a couple more goals against the Revolution. They could have, you know, beat DC by a more comfortable margin. They could have beat Kansas City perhaps by a more comfortable margin. So, it's going to change how the Reds have the game plan for this one with him not in the picture. I don't think they've seen too much of the Red Bulls without him this year. So, I don't know how that will, you know, affect the Red Bull style going into this game, knowing that, you know, they need to score at least two goals to advance. I think what we saw from the Revs against Columbus when they, you know, went home having an advantage is they played a little bit deeper. They played a counterattacking style, and certainly there were those holes to counterattack. You saw what the Revolution were able to do late in the game against the Red Bulls with that Jones goal on a great counterattack. There should be more of those opportunities against New York, so I expect them to kind of play a little bit more defensively, but in the same sense, be willing to go forward on the counterattack because that's what they've done so well on all year. So I think this game sets up very, very well for their style of play, much like the Columbus series did, just with a little bit less of a cushion. And I expect them to, you know, find opportunities to score goals, try to build that lead, and certainly not just, you know, bunker down all game.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens. All right, Sean, thanks for joining me, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks a lot. Will we see you up in New England?
I'm going to try.
Hope so.
I hope so, too. Believe me, I would like to try. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. Always delightful to have him on. Very honest guy. Very good analysis on New England Soccer Today for soccer in the New England area of the United States and the north, very, very northeastern end of the country. Him along with Brian O'Connell able to join me. Actually, Brian was not able to join me, but saw Brian and Sean at Red Bull Arena in the press room. But, you know, these two guys, they do a great job. And we were talking about this matchup, that this could be a midfield matchup, a midfield battle for both sides. Of course, you know, the potent midfield that the Red Bulls have with Peggy Lou Yindu in the middle, you had Thierry Henry wide left and Lloyd Sam wide right at the time, of course, Bradley Wright Phillips. And then, of course, with the two midfield defenders, Eric Alexander and Dax McCarty. And now, what we're going to see in the second leg, you're definitely going to see Eric Alexander paired up again with Dax McCarty between the offensive midfield and the back line. And you're not going to see Bradley Wright Phillips up top in this one. You're going to see Tim Cahill, the obvious choice, being up top. Or if you move Lou Yindula up top and have Cahill behind him, you could do that too. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Peggy's going to be behind Cahill. Cahill will be the man up top getting those crosses and, of course, power header shots always. And you're going to see something interesting because, as we all know, Bradley Wright Phillips will be suspended due to yellow card accumulation. We'll get into that in a minute. Once again, it's not a great result for the Red Bulls. They conceded two away goals. They did convert one. So it's all about when those goals are going to get scored up in New England and Gillette Stadium, and will they be timely? Because at the moment, if the Red Bulls convert twice, obviously the away goals rule will be level. But on aggregate, it's going to be 3-2 New York. If it's 2-1 New York at the end of 90 minutes, we're heading for extra time. But I'll say this. If they can get three away goals, then everything is advantage New York, because the away goals rule will be in favor of them. So if I'm the Red Bulls, and let me just say this, they proved to New England that they were a tougher opponent than the Crew, because they took care of business with the Crew. They had a 4-2 away, 4-2 in the first leg, four road goals, and they just completely cleaned up the mess in the second leg. Now we will see what's going to happen with this Red Bull team. Yes, it's on field turf. Yes, it's on the plastic pitch. Yes, you are going to see someone that normally does not play on that surface. But the truth of the matter is, he has no choice. Thierry Henry will play second leg in New England. He has no choice this match. And you know what? I'm glad he's doing it. I know he's annoyed. I know that he's not happy about it. But he has no choice, and he knows he has no choice. Whether they win it, lose it, draw, force them to extra time, and whatever, at least he's going to play on it. He has no choice. And let me just say this. I understand how he feels. Stan, because he feels the way the game should be played is always on a natural grass surface. I understand that. I understand about his chronic Achilles problems. He's scared that he's not going to do well on it. He thinks he'll have this problem during the match. And I hope that's not the case. I hope that his Achilles flare-ups will not knock him out of the game. Juan Pablo Angel had to play on it. David Beckham had to play on it. So, look, Imerson Olave is going to have to play on it, and Thierry Henry is going to have to play on it. That's just the way it is. Until the Revolution get their own stadium, and very happy to hear the New England Revolution are and the city of Boston might go through with a stadium from the downtown area near the South Station and on the Red Line near the Broadway stop of the MBTA subway. Do you know how great that would be? You don't have to go back to Gillette Stadium anymore. And everything is going to be right there from within the city limits of Boston, Massachusetts. That would be fantastic. That would be fantastic if that happened. Let's see what more information will come out of the Boston Globe. An article is already out there in the Boston Globe about the New England Revolution Stadium project possibly going through, and it sounds like it will go through. It's about time that the Kraft family, especially Robert Kraft, that owns both the Patriots and the Revolution, will push forward for that stadium and to make it solid and to make it natural grass. Thank God. But let me just say this once again. This was a game where you had everything going the right way. First things first. I want to thank the over 1,200 New England Revolution fans, and thank you to the New England Revolution for providing all those free buses for them, taking over 4 to 5 sections of the upper bowl in the northern end of Red Bull Arena. I also want to congratulate every single Red Bull fan that came to Red Bull Arena, 25,000 for a playoff sellout. What a wonderful scene it was to see Red Bull Arena filled, every single seat converted by a supporter, by a fan. The South Ward was in full voice. The fans, every one of you in full voice. You did a wonderful job, a brilliant job. I am so happy to be in the press box to see that happen. I was so happy to see that happen. I was crying inside because finally this team is now relevant. You are relevant now. And I'm hoping and I'm praying that every one of you that has a season ticket or will get a season ticket or goes on the day of the game to get tickets, please fill Red Bull Arena every single home game on the weekend or during the weekday. Fill it up. Fill Red Bull Arena. Fill it up. Show everyone why that is the greatest soccer arena in the United States. Show everyone why we give a damn about this game and this club. Show it. Show it for all of us. Thank you so much to every single person that came, whether you're supporting the Revolution as a road trip or you're supporting your hometown New York Red Bulls, because that's your stadium. That's your home away from home. Telling you right now, that is absolutely a brilliant job of filling up that stadium that deserved on a wonderful day. The result did not go in favor of the Red Bulls, but you know who saw it? Everyone watching on NBC Sports. It was an absolutely brilliant sight to see. And I was very happy and very, very excited. that Red Bull Arena was filled to the hilt, and I thank all of you once again for making that dream become a reality. Thank you so much for doing a wonderful job. This match was great. Obviously, Roy Miller suspended for both legs. Obviously, his veteran style of play was missed. I really thought Ambrose Iyongo did a very good job. Now, you know what's going to happen in that situation? He didn't commit a foul. He didn't get booked on the Teal Bunbury situation. But you know what? When you got a player like Teal Bunbury who has quick feet, and, you know, fine, he's a veteran right now, a couple of years already in the league and everything from Kansas City to New England Revolution and stuff, but still, anyone can get bit. Even a veteran can get bit with that move. So I'm not going to blame Oyongo for that goal. Can't blame him for that goal. It was a well-worked move. Maybe Oyongo should have stuck a foot in there, fine. But other than that, not his fault. It was just a well-worked move and a great goal with the left foot by Bunbury to beat Robles to the far post and in on the bender with his left. Normally doesn't go left. He usually goes right, but it was a great shot and it was a great goal. Nothing you can do there. Great job for the equalizer by Ibrahim Sakaya. Lost the ball, regained the ball on the tackle, pushed it to Oyongo. Oyongo moved forward. Nice ball to, it looked like to Thierry Henry, but he made the dummy move, left it alone for Peggy Lou Yandula on his horse, takes a shot, saved by Shuttleworth, but the rebound went right back to Lou Yandula. Great job, even though he did go down on his own. Swing with the left foot, and the ball hits the crossbar and out, never crossed the goal line. Bradley Wright Phillips comes in, heads the ball into the net for the equalizer as he's on his horse, trailing the play for the rebound, and he puts it home. It's 1-1. That play, with a couple of questions, obviously, was Jermaine Jones onside? Yes, he was. He was behind the ball. Any angle you're trying to catch it on, some will say he's on, some will say he's off, but he was behind the ball. As long as he stayed behind the ball, crossed by Teal Bunbury to fake out Luis Robles, and you saw Jermaine Jones slide into the ball and just put it into an empty net to make it 2-1 on aggregate, two away goals for the Revolution. That was a tight-knit game. Who do you blame that one on? We'll hear from Dax McCarty later on, but I kind of blame a little bit Richard Eckersley because instead of making a quick turn and hustling back on defense to help and track Jones, this is where I kind of wish defenders would not do this when there's a quick counter. Yes, he made an error, but instead of standing there and going, oh my God, why didn't that work? He should have just quickly turned around, started a run to go back and help out Robles, help out his fellow backline defenders, his center backs in Sagaya and Olave. They were caught on the counter. If Eckersley comes back and he finds a way to track down Jermaine Jones and sticks his foot out to prevent that low, hard pass to Jones, you can say it's still 1-1 at that particular point in time. And then who knows, maybe the Red Bulls would have gone ahead with a surprise shot to maybe make it 2-1 on aggregate for them. But we'll never know because it's 2-1 Revolution. The substitution made, taking out Eric Alexander for Tim Cahill, hindsight's 20/20. You're thinking that's going to be a solid substitution. But Alexander, to be honest, did a great job with Dax, giving Lee Wynn nothing. And that's what's probably going to happen in the second leg. They're going to give Lee Wynn nothing in the second leg because you're going to have Tim Cahill because of the yellow card suspension on Bradley Wright Phillips as he got booked. His second yellow card in the playoffs. Everything gets rescinded after the second leg. And that's a situation where, you know, we have seen the league tagging the Red Bulls on different types of challenges that either gets booked and then suspended anyway, does not get booked, suspended anyway. We have seen in the first leg of last year's Eastern Conference semifinal down in Houston, Jaimison Olave with a tackle from behind, scissor tackle on a Dynamo defender from behind, and he got sent off. The third game against the Houston Dynamo in league play, Peggy Uyandula apparently with a scissor challenge on a Dynamo player never got booked, but the league disciplinary committee suspended him anyway for a game for that tackle. Armando in the regular season has been booked for those types of tough challenges. And once again, the disciplinary committee comes out of nowhere and says, you're getting two games for that, regardless. Wasn't a red card. They suspended him right there. You got booked for a yellow? No red. You're suspended two games. Did you make that dangerous challenge? Yes. Did you get booked? No. Well, you're suspended anyway. Encroachment was the card on Bradley Wright Phillips, not allowing Bobby Shuttleworth to distribute the ball. And he's suspended for this game. Yet, Jermaine Jones, who comes in for the New England Revolution, in the 26th minute, Jermaine Jones flying into Dax McCarty, and he takes his legs like a scissor, flying scissors tackle, Cardi. Jermaine Jones gets booked. The MLS disciplinary committee decides that's enough. You're booked. Nothing more to see here. Half a day to figure it out. Sometimes it'll take 2 days. Sometimes it'll take 2.5 or 3 days. A New York Red Bull player gets booked or doesn't get booked for that type of a challenge, and there's a suspension right away. Where is the suspension here? Shouldn't Jermaine Jones be suspended for that? Chapman decided to keep the red card in his back pocket and give Jones the benefit of the doubt. Why? I understand it's a playoff game. I understand that guys are going hard after each other, every single challenge, every single tackle. But if the New York Red Bull players are getting tagged after the fact, whether there's a booking or not, and they're sitting out a game or two games, which is what Peggy Uyandula did this year after that tackle against one of the Dynamo players in that third game. And let's not forget the fun and wild and wacky moments of Armando. Booked and suspended for no red card. Not booked, you're suspended anyway for those types of challenges. Where is the suspension for one game for Jermaine Jones for that type of foul in Dax McCarty? And I know what some of you are going to be saying. Well, you know what? The league is not intentionally trying to go after the Red Bulls. Well, when you count all of these types of fouls that were booked or not, yet you're getting suspended anyway by the disciplinary committee, why is Jermaine Jones getting basically left off the hook? Answer me that, Commissioner Garber, and to the disciplinary committee, why don't you answer me that as well? Because that was reckless and that was dangerous. Chapman should have booked him, not just booked him, I thought he should have sent him off. That was reckless and endangering the legs and the career of Dax McCarty. And because he wears a Red Bull shirt, maybe it looks like he's not going to get tagged. You know, all we're looking for is consistency. If you're going to keep doing this to the Red Bulls, well, then other players should be handled that type of suspension as well. One game. Teach him a lesson. Tell him, yes, you're new here. Yes, you're part of the national team. You should have been ejected, sent off. You should be suspended for the second leg. And that did not happen. And I'm very disappointed in Major League Soccer for not doing the business that they should have done. And I'm not happy. And for those that are not happy about what happened, here's Mike Petke, head coach of the New York Red Bulls, after the first leg loss to the New England Revolution.
Hey, Red Bulls, head coach Mike Petke for you. Mike, you want to start with your thoughts on the game?
We did two things wrong tonight. We didn't finish the dozens of or how many of our chances that we had. And we... I'm trying to use the right words here. I feel like we gifted them two goals. Credit to them, they put them away. But in a game like this, if you don't finish your one-on-ones with the goalie, your headers on the six-yard box, wide open, off a rebound, touch in, you get paid. The beauty of this, though, is that we have a chance to correct it next week.
All right, guys, open up for questions. Start with Christian, and we'll go on to Philip.
Mike, could you just talk about New England? In the first 20 minutes or so, they were pressing pretty hard, pretty high, especially against the two center backs. But then you guys kind of made a little bit of an adjustment with maybe Dak and Aaron dropping back just a little bit more. What did you see, and what were the adjustments you made?
Listen, we usually start off a little bit on the back foot almost every game. You know, they stepped up press. They had that header from Jones, which is, I think, one of about three chances they had, three or four chances, clear chances, and that was woke us up a little bit. And then our passing was very good in the first half. Our ability to find Eric and Peggy behind the lines, free Bradley up. Lloyd had a good day out in the wing. We calmed down a little bit and moved the ball quick, and it got a lot better.
Can you talk, Mike, about the challenge of going into New England without your top scorer now?
What, is Bradley suspended? Didn't even realize. I can't talk about that at this moment, to be honest with you. The game just ended. Obviously, we have to, listen, no matter who's out there next weekend, there's no game after that to look forward to if you don't get the job done. So however we get it done next weekend, we have to. That's it. That's the beauty of sports right there. Guys need to step up in big situations. I need to step up this week. The coaching staff does. Simple as that.
And I'm here with Michael DeFranco.
Mike, I just wanted to get your take on what did you think of Bradley Wright Phillips' yellow card. That's part one. And part two is, do you think it was wise for the league to use a referee that already worked at Red Bulls?
Listen, I would love for both teams, not the Red Bulls, for both teams tonight. You always ask the questions that get me fired. Scott's not his truth. I'm being dead serious. I know you want to write your stories. What am I going to say here? The referee lost control of the game tonight for both teams. For both. I almost wanted to get a yellow card because I felt left out. I know it sounds funny. I'm not trying to be a funny guy here. I'm not going to, besides that, I'm not going to comment on it. So he's 50-50 tonight. Got assist and he got beat. That's my thoughts on it.
Go with Howard, then over to Ivis.
Mike, obviously you've been around the team for a long time. Disappointing result for sure, but do you remember a bigger game in terms of build-up, in terms of bad atmosphere, in terms of just the overall coverage that we've seen in this franchise's history and what's happened this week?
No. I don't. Talking about Bunbury? No, listen, he's got some pace on him. He's a dangerous player. I thought we did well on Lee Wynn for the most part today. I thought that the guys listened to what we want to do and why we didn't want to make him a complete focal point this week. He's obviously somebody that we talked about and had to address. And I thought that's Eric, Olave, Ibra, always kept an eye on him. Jones as well. I mean, we looked a lot at Jones' tendencies, and I think for the most part, You know, we did well on Hungary, you know, one little step inside and a beautiful finish. You know, you take your hat off to him, but, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I go back to what I said, all credit to them, they're a hot team right now, and they're a very good team. That's not the right game to not finish your chances for us.
Right. Assuming next weekend that you're sticking with the formation that's been so good to you, would Jim be the logical person to go in there? Or?
Listen, assumptions get, you know, I don't like assumptions, so let me think about it, and let me figure out what we're going to do this week. I'm not about to make any type of comments on who's going to play next week 20 minutes after the game.
Is there any one lack of finish play that will sit in your mind as you go
dead tonight? There's four of them, and I'm not going to point them out. You can go look at the video. I'm not going to point my players out. Obviously, they didn't miss them on purpose. You know, that's life. You know, sometimes it just doesn't go your way. But you could either sit here and in the locker room and sulk and fight and cry, or you could realize we have a game next weekend.
Well, Christian, I will finish up with Dave.
I just want to ask about the importance of Pecky in this match. It seemed like he was important for calming things down. And when did you see him start to click into this gear that we're now seeing in the playoffs?
No, yeah, I thought he did well tonight. Listen, I saw it coming in halftime. It was trying to figure out, besides in the first 10 minutes or so, trying to figure out if we need to make any adjustments. I didn't feel that we did. I didn't feel we did need to make any adjustments. I think the ball was moving well. I think we were going side to side, getting it moving, and Pecky was a big part of that, his ability to find those little pockets. You know, we knew that they were going to put Jones, even though it's a small little change, from left in the middle to right to keep an eye on Thierry, and we were hoping that would free other people up, and I think it really freed up Pecky a lot today. And he got behind the lines, and he was pulling the strings a little bit. He's done well.
That's what I heard, Dave.
Just wanted to find a bit of thought process behind subbing out Eric Alexander, who was playing very well, seemed to be one of the most vibrant players on both sides of the ball for Tim Cahill at that point in the match.
What was my thought process in subbing out the MVP, you said, of the game so far, Eric?
Eric.
And
I didn't say MVP.
Oh, I thought you said most valuable player, no?
No.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said that. Listen, at the end of the day, someone's him coming on, his ability in the air, his ability to get forward with 20 minutes left, and his being that it's 20 minutes, he should have the stamina to get forward and get back. You know, it's just a change that we thought perhaps he had a great week of training, perhaps could pay off for us. That's it. 10 pieces. Good in the air. Maybe get a header.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Mike Pecky on the situation, and let's get straight over to the captain, Thierry Henry.
Before the team comes in an away goal situation, scores two, and you guys have to come back.
Yeah, that happens. That happened to me before. I mean, we left ourselves in a situation where we have to go and make history at their place. It's a tough one because we considered a goal at the end of the game. We couldn't be in between, trying to win the game. And maybe staying 1-1, which is, if we would have stayed 1-1, it wouldn't have been that bad.
Mm-hmm.
As you see, it is a bad result. But they took the opportunity, the only one they had in the second half, and they scored. We had a couple of opportunity to go maybe 2-1 up, and we didn't take advantage of that. So fair play to them. They played well. They came with a plan, and they won. So hopefully we can do the same at their place. Still not 10 minutes to go, and maybe more. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to give them credit. They played a good game.
When you fall behind 1-0 with a run goals like that, do you put extra pressure? Do you still play your game?
No, I mean, you know, it's, although, you know, you can always do better when you concede a goal, but it was a hell of a goal. Sometimes you just have to fight and try to fight back, it's the type I want, the goal that you can't say, oh, you should have covered a bit better or not, and it was a better goal. It was a good goal, sorry, and it's a tough one, but you just want to keep your composure and make sure that you don't go too early forward and keep your shape And we came back into the game, and it looked like we were going to be the team that was going to score. And that's how it is when you play this type of game. They scored before we did, right at the end, and they won.
Gary, were you aware when Bradley got the yellow that he was out for the next game?
No, to be honest, I didn't know, but there was a lot of yellow cards today. I don't think the game was a dirty game, to be honest, but that's the way it went.
How difficult will it be to move forward without him on the
team? Oh, crazy. I mean, I don't have to tell you what he did all season. he has been amazing for us. We're going to have to try to do it without him. Score two goals without him is going to be something very difficult without conceding one. But we're going to have to try to do that. And, you know, I've seen crazier stuff in my career, so hopefully we can add one more. But, again, don't get it twisted. They played well. You have to give them their credit. Don't take away anything from them and none of that. They played well. You have to take it on the chin and move forward and make sure that we can compete against them at their place. And they've been playing well since for more than 2 months now. They've been solid and they showed that today. And now we're going to try to do what they did to us today.
You've been here since.
The artificial turf up there. How tough is that for you to play on that? How different is
that? I said it so many times, it is not the future, and we all know it. And that's it.
I'm just curious, you haven't been here since 2010. Did this feel different, just the atmosphere on the field, in the stands, just even media this week? Has it felt different? Did this feel like a more important game than you've played here? And if so, how did it feel that way?
Well, yeah, a bit. It was great to see the stadium the way it was today. Great atmosphere. As I said, a tiny bit more people today to talk to the players after the game. But at the end of the day, you know, we lost. So I would have preferred maybe less of you guys and for us to win. But we're still not out. But like I said, you know, I don't want to play down the way New England played. They played well. We need to copy what they did to us and even better if we want to go through.
And result aside, is this what you envisioned when you came here? Result aside, I mean.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what I wanted. Lose the game and then yeah. See if we can maybe win. No, obviously.
No, I'm saying other than the result though,
no,
just the atmosphere
I mean,
and everything
it's
else.
It's only the result at the end of the day, you know. Like I said to you, the fans were outstanding today. But we didn't give them what they were expecting. So hopefully we can rectify that in Boston. That won't be easy. I mean, it's a bit outside of Boston, but actually a bit outside of New York. but, you know, it'll be tough. But at the end of the day, you know, we're going home disappointed. The fans going home disappointed. Everybody that loves New York Red Bull will go home disappointed. And that's the only thing that does matter today. So hopefully we can change that on Saturday.
Pretty frustrated with the missed chances. You talked about the missed chances.
No, things happen. I'm not frustrated about the missed chances. We could have scored. You know, the frustration was more on conceding a goal at the end. It happens, you know. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. And it went their way today, and they put the right effort for that to happen. But yeah, we missed chances, but you know, we were in good position sometimes to score some of them, and we didn't. Hopefully we can do that at their place, but, you know, that can happen.
Is there any questions about you playing?
I'm playing, you happy?
any worry about any limitation in terms of time? Or?
Well, the only thing is this, if we go through or we don't go through, if my Achilles don't last, then I will be on holiday. If we don't go through, so I'm sure guys wouldn't care if I can walk or not after that, so that's just the way it is.
You said yourself the game was not dirty. I mean, it looked physical, but it wasn't dirty. Are you surprised that 10 cards, the game's not dirty?
As the ref, I don't know. I played in some dirty games in the Premier League, and I can tell you it was a bit way tougher than that. So you need to ask him, because I didn't distribute them.
Terry, you say you're going on holiday. How long is that holiday?
You tell me, we're not out yet. After this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Thierry Henry. And yeah, he's not happy, but you know what? He knows he's got to do a job. And good for him, and I'm glad to see him doing it. Last one, we'll take Tim Cahill about how he feels. And he still feels confident. He still feels confident that they'll do a job there. So here's Tim Cahill.
Mayo, players on both sides.
Yeah, that was the follow-up.
How many yellow cards was there today?
10.
Huh?
10.
10 total.
I feel sorry for the supporters. You know, having to come watch a game that's broken up by, you know, an intense game where you're going to get challenges. You know, some, in my opinion, you know, the game should be reviewed when you look at how many yellows it was. It's ridiculous. You should be able to have a free-flowing game, even in some of the challenges. And I got sent off, didn't I, a couple of weeks ago for just, you know, raising my left foot, not even my right. So it's debatable, some of the calls that he made today, but that's life. We've put up with it all season. And today, I thought we played really well. We had the better of the game, and they capitalised, you know, on us attacking the game.
How difficult is it to go in without Bradley next week?
We've just got to believe. Bradley's been, you know, the heart and soul of this team all season, and, you know, it's going to be tough, but, you know, this tie's by far over. You know, I think they'll be more than happy leaving here with a 2-1 victory, but this ain't over. No chance. Not the style of we play, the attacking players that we have, and the belief that we have in the team.
There aren't this many positions really that you haven't played at one point or another for this team. Would you expect that would be just the likely
I don't know
for you to
I don't know. You know, the thing is, for me, it's all about playing. So today was 20 minutes, whatever it was, and who knows, next week I'll be available for selection, but who knows where. But overall, it's just weird. The game was like robbery today, you know, because I truly believe that we had, I think, the majority of the game, more chances. And they, you know, you got to give them credit. They're a hard-working team. I thought Jones was very good with the way he played, and also the breaking up of the play, and very clever, so you give him his credit. But overall, you know, we'll watch the video and we'll look at how we're now just going to go there and try and ram raid it, because there's no other way of playing. We've got to win and we need goals.
How difficult is, as you're watching, before you came in, there were a lot of chances early on that just weren't finished there.
Yeah, I think for us, we're probably more disappointed in ourselves, because we know that on any other day, we probably would have won that game 4-1 or 4-2. So I think I said that, you know, if we don't concede, we'll win, and we probably would have, you know, 1-0. But I strongly believe in this team. You know, I know we can score goals, and I know that we're pretty fearless when we play at home. And today was just unfortunate, because this is the biggest crowd I've ever seen at home, regardless whether we played Arsenal or Tottenham. It was amazing. So it felt a little bit like playing back in the UK.
For you, you were as confident the other day.
I'm still confident. I'm not even playing. And I knew I wasn't playing. So, and it's not a lack of respect, because it's a fact. The way we've been playing, and also the way we're going forward, is today, you know, if you look at the stats, it probably shows we could have won 4-2. So it's not really a lack of respect, because this is football. You know, sometimes you have to say it as it is, but they deserve a hell of a lot of credit coming here, scoring 2 goals and having like 3 shots. So, you know, so you take it on the chin, but I don't like how people put it, you know, not respecting them. Because the first thing you have to do is respect your playing, and that's a given. But if anyone had to assess the game today, then they would say that we come off, you know, pretty hard done by.
Did you feel they were pressing those last 15 minutes, or do you think they were going to probably take the draw?
No, they'll take the draw. We didn't want the draw, because we knew that we could get another goal, and it was obvious to see that we could have got more goals, but it just didn't happen, and we had numerous amount of chances, and it means we have to go away and just throw the kitchen sink at it, and we're going to do that, because, like we said after here, we're not out of the tie. We lost 2-1 at home, so it'll be a difficult place to go on turf, and they'll feel, you know, confident. But hopefully we can go there and do something special for our fans.
Tim, as guys came in, they were all learning, including Bradley, that he was out for the next game.
I didn't have a clue.
Are you surprised that that wasn't addressed beforehand? You know, for the guys.
I'm surprised the whole team's not suspended and a few of like theirs, because I'm just gobsmacked with how many yellow cards.
No, I just mean in terms of the fact that I mean, Bradley was just telling us that he didn't realize that you know he was in a position if he had a yellow he was out.
Yeah, we didn't know. We didn't know because, you know, if you got a yellow in this game and you get a yellow in the next game, then you're not suspended. So, you know, the rules change all the time. And in Champions League, if you get a yellow today and you get a yellow next week, you're suspended.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking that question because I wanted to know whether I could go on and tackle or not. So,
yeah.
And even when I made that challenge, me and Jones were laughing.
Yeah.
Because I tackled him. But in the Premier League today, when I was watching Crystal Palace against Liverpool, some of the challenges today wouldn't have even got pulled up. So I think to improve the game, you have to let it flow. You know, there's 20-odd thousand people watching the game, and we're sitting on the benches every single time. At the same time with it, there's a yellow. But even for their team as well, you know, you want to take them out of the game, and you want to have the competitive side. So... yeah, next week there's probably going to be another 10 yellows.
Do you think in retrospect that Mike should have made guys more aware of what the situation was?
No, trust me. I was asking on the bench about this rule.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I get a yellow card today and I get one next week, what's going to happen? And they said, no, you can get a yellow today. So I know I can go on the challenge with a bit of force mm-hmm. to win the ball. If I get a yellow card today and get one next week, then today I'm going on and taking it easy, but... No, I don't even think I touched him, and that's why we were laughing afterwards. And I said to the ref, the game should be about football, not about the referee. You shouldn't be talking about the referee after the game. That's the sad point, that watching as a spectator, which I was for 70 minutes, the whole game was about the official.
Tim, you've spoken in the past about the growth of soccer on the field in this country, and you're talking about the referees now, some of the infrastructure with MLS and changing rules. Is there frustration on that side that on that end they're not keeping up?
I think this today is a perfect example that everyone can make their own mind up. You know, so not only us as players, but maybe the media should say what they really feel about today's game. Did you think it was 10 yellows worthy of 10 yellows?
I think there's general consensus that the referee lost control of the match, but in your
opinion,
that's
out of his mouth. He said that the referee lost control of the game. I didn't say that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
No problem.
Good job by Dave Martinez to say what Kale was thinking there. Of course, Empire of Soccer and Seeing Red, Dave Martinez. So. That was pretty interesting, a lot of fun there. But obviously, this is where we are. The officiating was atrocious, and it's going to get a lot worse depending on who has been assigned to which game. So let's quickly go right now. Second leg at Gillette Stadium this coming Saturday, November 29th on NBC Sports Network at 3 o'clock broadcast start time. I'll be at 3:25 kickoff. Referee for Red Bulls at Revolution, Baldomero Toledo is the referee. The bench side assistant is Frank Anderson. The far side assistant is Ian Anderson. And the fourth official is Silviu Petrescu from the Canadian Soccer Association. Sunday, November 30th, Seattle Sounders hosting the LA Galaxy at CenturyLink Field, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific on ESPN. Referee Jair Marufo. Bench side assistant Eric Boria. Far side assistant Corey Rockwell and fourth officials Hilario Grajeda. So it should be a lot of fun. Should be interesting. I cannot wait. I want to thank my guests, Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy Insider, and Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to tonight's show. Join me next week. We'll review the second leg of both conference finals. As we will see who will face whom for the right to be called champions of Major League Soccer, as the final will be either in Seattle or Los Angeles / Carson on Sunday, December the 7th. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you again for listening tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you again. Bye-bye for now. Take care. So long. See you next time. Or listen to you next time.